The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, joined by my co-host today, Nathan Glidewell. Nathan, we went over the weekend and we were trying to figure out what we're going to talk about, and we were blessed with some content to discuss. First being my favorite team in the NBA, the Atlanta Hawks, firing their general manager, Landry Fields, after three seasons. Landry Fields, he had some ups and downs as the Atlanta Hawks GM. In the summer of 2022-2023, Travis Schlenk, the GM before him, stepped down. Fields took over. And before Fields took over, Schlenk had made the questionable trade for DeJounte Murray, trading multiple first-round picks for him, and ended up not working out in Atlanta. And then Fields tried to make up the mistake that Schlenk made and traded DeJounte Murray to the Pelicans for Dyson Daniels and some other assets that Dyson Daniels ended up being a pretty good acquisition with all things said and done. But Fields is now out the door. He posted a 117-129 record in his tenure, missed playoffs two out of the 3 years. The first year he made it, in these last 2 years, he has failed to get out of the play-in. Not what you want to be as a GM in any league, and Atlanta Hawks fans, they were spoiled with that 2020 run in the playoffs, and they expect a lot better with this team. But as much as I criticize Landry Fields openly, he left this roster, I think, in a much better place for the future than he received it. But Nathan, as an outsider looking in, what are your thoughts on Atlanta Hawks moving on from Landry Fields, and what do you think their future is ahead of them?
Well, it's clear that they're going to be faced with a fork in the road and what kind of decision they want to make. I think in previous years, they, obviously with the DeJounte Murray trade, they decided they wanted to try to continue to be contenders, and you saw how that worked out. I never agreed with that trade to begin with. It really bit them in the butt, and I go back to when they traded DeJounte Murray to the Pelicans. I really thought that they should have as well traded Trae Young and kind of blew it up there. But that's not the way they went, and that's not what Andrew Fields wanted. The team was competitive at times, but there are a ton of holes in it, and that is exactly why they weren't able to make it out of the play-in. You saw a number of issues and problems, particularly in the scoring department. And one of the biggest question marks for me was when he traded away DeAndre Hunter for Caris LeVert and George Niang. I think that was a bad trade on his part. I really liked DeJounte Hunter in Atlanta's offense. I felt like he was a good option. But instead, he got rid of him. And the two guys, Caris LeVert, he contributes some. George Niang contributes some. But they were nowhere near what I thought Atlanta needed at the time. And that really proved itself in the play-in. But moving forward, this offseason is going to be about what kind of decision you want to make. I think the clear and obvious decision is to go into a rebuild, trade Trae Young away, see what assets you can get from him. Maybe if Dyson Daniels doesn't fit your long-term project, sell him high. I mean, you can get really good assets for him, which would suck. It'd be a hard thing to do, but it'd be important. And then veteran guys, I mean, you can see and chop around Caris LeVert, George Niang. I don't think you'll really get much for him at all. It's going to be a hard rebuild, but it's better to start it now than to continue to try to compete and waste more time. I think that's the biggest thing. Atlanta already knows that they wasted time with the DeJounte Murray experiment, and this roster is nowhere near able to compete for a championship. I mean, you had the good run in 2020, but that is long in the past. You got to get towards the future, and you got to make the hard decision.
You look at the other two openings at the general manager position, well, with the Kings filling theirs, but the Nuggets being GM being fired, and there's probably going to be some more moves this offseason.
Nico.
But I think the Hawks situation, roster-wise and salary cap, it's kind of inviting for a general manager or a basketball operations guy, because they did promote a guy to be general manager. They're looking for a head of basketball operations. But it's a very inviting situation. Outside of Trae Young, you have a lot of young guys on some friendly contracts. I mean, you look at Jalen Johnson. Landry Fields, one of the smartest things he did was sign him to an extension that is $30 million flat for the next 5 years. And what we saw in Jalen Johnson just early in this part of the last season, where he showed a lot of promise, went down with an injury, and it kind of derailed the Hawks' season. But when he was playing, he was arguably the best player on the court for the Hawks. So you look at him as a foundational piece going forward. You talk about Dyson Daniels, Nathan, maybe trying to trade him high. His team option is up this offseason. You have to accept it if you're Atlanta Hawks. You don't let him walk for nothing. But you have to make the decision. If he were to win an award this season, he's up for two, most improved defensive player. He's going to be eligible for that Supermax extension. He might want that. Do I think he's worth it? Probably not, as good as defensive player as he is. That's a big decision that Atlanta Hawks have to make if they're going to want to pay him that big sum of money, considering his offensive woes at times. Bree Shishay, while he didn't play good in the play-in finale against Miami Heat, we can't ignore how well he played throughout the season, considering the expectations a lot of people had for him, including myself. I mean, I was head in hands when they drafted him, wanted to die right there. But Langer Fields, again, made a very smart decision here, and it looks like Rhys Shea is going to turn out to be one of the better prospects in this draft, even though last year's draft
was the terrible draft? I mean,
was pretty poor, but, I mean, he could have done a lot worse at number one. We've known teams to get number one overall pick and just absolutely crap their pants. So the Atlanta Hawks roster construction, you have a lot going for it going forward. It's just going to depend on what you do with guys like Trae Young. Do you move him? I think it's time. He's 26 years old. Rhys Shishay, Jalen Johnson, guys like that are below that age. Jalen Johnson being the oldest one with 23 years old. Onyeka Okongwu's 24. And Trae Young's kind of on their timeline. But I just don't see Trae Young being that guy going forward around those pieces. I mean, we see it at times. When teams switch and Trae Young's caught on that taller guard or somehow managed to get caught on a big man, I mean, it's over. There's the defense is screwed. So this team is not – it's not constructed well for a guy like Trae Young to be the point guard. I think he has all the talent in the world when it comes to offense. But his defense, his effort there, his willingness to go out on the court and try to play defense, I mean, we saw it in overtime against the Miami Heat. I mean, didn't go contest a jump shot. And then somehow the guy that shot the jump shot got his own rebound, Trae Young standing there trying to get it, and then ended up making the three-pointer at the end of the day. So Trae Young has run his course in Atlanta. I do think the next head of basketball operations and the new GM, Sala, have to make a decision to move on from Trae Young. It's time. You have guys for your future, Jalen Johnson, Rhys Shishay, Dyson Daniels, Onyeka Okongwu. Maybe Kobe Bufkin can finally get healthy. You think that was the big one of the biggest mistakes of Landry Fields' short tenure as a GM was drafting Kobe Bufkin in his first draft as the GM. He has not played a full season yet. So the Hawks, you're at a crossroads, like you said, Nathan. You have to make a decision. Trae Young, Dyson Daniels, the extension going forward. Do you gamble on a star in the offseason and try to do what you've been wanting to do with Trae Young? Kevin Durant's going to be on the market. Paul George, maybe. I mean, we really don't know right here and right now who's going to be on the market this offseason, but those are kind of the two names you look at for the Atlanta Hawks. But do you gamble on these older players and trade away even more picks? Because the Hawks don't own their own first-round pick until 2028. They don't own the rights to it. So do you continue to gamble away your first-round picks and pray that a KD or Paul George can get this team over the hump in the Eastern Conference, which you know is already stacked with the Boston Celtics and the Cleveland Cavaliers, New York Knicks. The Pistons look really good there. They're trying to figure it out. The Pacers. Do you try to gamble that, or do you just do what you need to be doing and what the Saints need to be doing, Nathan, to bring them
back into this? I don't know how the Saints got into all of this. We're talking about the Hawks right now.
It's just tear it down and restart. Build around the guys you have, Rhys Shishay, Jalen Johnson, and all those guys, and just start from scratch. You're in a great position to start from scratch. There's no need to try to Phoenix Suns your rebuild and accelerate it to the point where you're sitting here in 2 years and you haven't made the playoffs and you haven't had first-round picks and you have no bench, and you have players that are old as dirt. I don't want to see that happen for the Atlanta Hawks. So while I don't think firing Langer Fields as early was the right move, I think the Hawks saw the writing on the wall where he was trying to be that GM that tried to force them into the playoffs and try to force the contention, and maybe Saleh and the new head basketball operations guy, whoever that is, to come in and do what they've been needing to do since their playoff run and the refusal the next year to build that roster up and just rebuild. That's what I want to see for the Hawks going forward, is rebuild and don't try to be a mid to low tier team in the Eastern Conference like you have been for the past handful of years and really the past 3 years under Landry Fields. So moving off the Atlanta Hawks, Nathan, and going to the college sports side of things, which will continue the rest of the show, the Colorado Buffaloes and Deion Sanders announced they were going to be retiring Shedeur Sanders' number 2 jersey and Travis Hunter's number 12 jersey after spring game that happened. And I just want to get your thoughts, Nathan, on do you agree with Colorado retiring these two guys' jerseys, considering the number of players in Colorado history that still do not have their jerseys retired?
I felt like it was an awful decision. There was more glory brought to their names than what really should have been. I mean, you look at their overall team record, it was garbage. They didn't make the playoffs. They didn't do anything super recognizable. There's not a lot of accolades other than the Heisman with Travis Hunter. So you really wonder how these guys got their names out there. And it all comes down to Deion being the head coach. If Deion's not the head coach, this is not even a conversation. We're not talking about it. But these guys have been hyped up the entire time they've been up Colorado. And while there was – I mean, Travis Hunter was a great player. He was great. And there was a reason he won the Heisman. Shedeur left a lot to be desired. And I don't understand – if you're going to retire a name, maybe retire Travis Hunter's. But Shedeur being included in that is pretty bogus. That is nepotism at its finest. And going forward, I want other schools to kind of look at this as an example of what a clown show looks like, because this is exactly it. I awarding trophies, like having your name retired for finishing poorly is something else. It is a generation of participation trophies at this point. I mean, as an Alabama fan, I don't want to see any, we went 8-4 and Jalen Milroe got his name retired because he had the 4th-and-31 play against Auburn. I don't want any of that crap. That's kind of loser talk. And that's the expectation they want to set, is to, and we're going to be flashy and we're going to have the media surround us and it's going to be all about Colorado, but we're not going to win anything important other than the Heisman, which that is also controversial. Then you know what? So be it. If that's what Colorado wants, I'm completely fine letting them do that. They can go do that in their own little corner while everyone else is trying to win a national championship. But it is a real disgrace to the tons of people who have already played at Colorado who do not have their jersey retired. It's just disrespectful. And to have those two people retired means absolutely nothing to have your jersey retired anymore, because they have they've ruined it. It's ruined.
You just look at the kind of the two players I think of that should have their jerseys retired, probably before Shedeur. Travis Hunter winning the Heisman, I think elevates him to the point where you have to retire his jersey for Colorado. Now, do I think it should have been the offseason immediately after? Probably not. Could have waited a few years. But you look at Eric Bieniemy, was third in Heisman voting in 1990, was on the national championship winning team in 1990, rushed for 1,600 yards and 17 touchdowns in that season. And then you look at a guy in Cordell Stewart, who I think of people back in those 90s and early 2000s, when they think about Colorado, they think of Cordell Stewart and how dynamic of a player he was. And for those two guys to not have their jerseys retired, and to have a guy like Shedeur Sanders to have his jersey retired, I think is absolute blasphemy. I don't get it at all. I understand Shedeur Sanders broke a lot of passing records for Colorado, but if that's the standard we're going to have for college programs to retire people's jerseys, breaking records, and for a mid-tier program, I mean, we just say we can't retire poor people's jerseys that don't really deserve it at the end of the day. Shedeur Sanders is one of the most talented players to go through the doors of Colorado, but the accolades, not winning any major awards, not winning big games, not winning a bowl game. I mean, I don't get it. It just comes down to your daddy's the head coach, so he's going to give you your the daddy treatment and retire your jersey for you because he loves you so much. That's what Colorado's come to. I know Dion. He's my dad. Whatever. I know him really well. He's like a father figure to me and all that, and that's great and wonderful. But at the end of the day, this program is turned into an absolute clown show with Deion Sanders at the helm. I mean, we've talked about it way too much on the show, Nathan, how just crazy this program has gotten with him at the leadership role. And he's done some great things for Colorado. I mean, he's brought them back to national prominence. But just the things that have happened around this program and everything involving it, it's crazy to me. And this is just like the icing on the cake for Deion and the way he's ran this program, just the favoritism he shows towards certain players. And it's absolutely shoves other players to the wayside because, you know, they don't fit what he wants. So just crazy to me that you have a guy in Shedeur Sanders have his jersey retired over guys like Cordell Stewart and Eric Bieniemy, who were such storied players for that program. And one of which won them a national championship. I mean, why is Eric Bieniemy's number not retired? If a Colorado fan could come on this show and explain it to me, I would love to hear it. That it's just wild to me that he's sitting there, no jersey retirement, but we have a guy like Shedeur with his jersey retired. Moving on from one clown show to another one, Nathan. Let's talk about Nico. Ends up transferring to UCLA, tried to get $4 million from Tennessee, ended up not working out. Tennessee told him to kick rocks, hit the portal. Nico did. There's rumors that teams were kind of waiting to see if his number dropped, and inevitably it did for UCLA. They ended up offering him $1.5 million in that range, according to a front office sport. So $500K decrease from what he was initially getting from Tennessee with what was about $2 million NIL-wise. And on top of the decrease in pay, he's also going to deal with income tax in the state of California, which is astronomical. So realistically, he's getting paid maybe about $1 million less than what he was getting at Tennessee. I don't claim to be a tax expert or anything, but I mean, that's just kind of a guesstimation. But Nathan, I mean, Nico, what is he doing?
Poor decision-making 101. I think I can take lessons from Nico on what not to do with my college football career. When this news started breaking, it just kept getting crazier and crazier. And this just feels like a nice little bow to wrap things up. Like the guy who is greedy and money hungry and really ruined his team gets the treatment he deserves by getting paid a lot less to a school that really isn't that great compared to Tennessee. And it is, I can't even wish him nothing but the best because he is the stuck up person that everyone thinks he is. He thinks he is the best player in college football based on how much he wanted to get paid. comparing himself, thinking he's better than Carson Beck and people who have proved themselves to be paid that much money. And this is what Nico gets. And I hope he enjoys his time in UCLA when they play at the Rose Bowl every single time with the 20 fans in the stands because, you know, people really support UCLA football at this moment. You know what? They'll finish in the bottom of the Big Ten and he can watch the other teams playing bowl games and he can sit at home with his 500K he's racked up because he decides he wants to get paid less and take a workshop opportunity. And he can sit there and squander in his decision. And then he can realize, oh, I'm actually not that good of a quarterback. I really just messed up my college career. No NFL team's going to want to draft me because I am such a diva and I'm going to be a cancer to the locker room. So where am I going to go from here? I think I'm probably going to go sell insurance if he's lucky enough.
Oh, God, I mean, I've never seen someone crap away more money in my entire life. I mean, you have it made at Tennessee. You made the college football playoff last year, getting paid $2 million to play the sport you love. You're going to continue to play in the best conference in the country and when it comes to college football and really college basketball now. And you get to start for such a storied program in Tennessee. And you say, you know what? I'm going to be money hungry. Let me go ahead and try to get an extra $2 million. Oh, don't work out. they can tell me to kick rocks. Well, end up in at UCLA. He went 5-7 last year. Didn't make a bowl game. Hasn't been relevant for a minute. Their program's in the dumpster right now. But let me go ahead and go there. For $500K less I was making at Tennessee, deal with the state income tax in California, and manage to crap away the minimal NFL hopes I had with how my team is going to perform this year. I mean, I have never seen someone squander away such a big opportunity in my entire life. I mean, this is just baffling to me how this guy, who five-star prospect, everybody wants Nico, the Nico sweepstakes, to landing at UCLA, who would be lucky to go 8-4 this year. Absolutely lucky to go 8-4 this year. There's no way they're sniffing the college football playoff. No way. And while Tennessee's roster might have not been enough to make the college football playoff, they had a much better chance of making it in the UCLA. Am I wrong in that?
Absolutely. You are completely correct. I mean, UCLA, I think they'd be lucky to make a bowl game. That is my expectation for them. That is my expectation every single year for them because they don't have that great of talent. And Nico had the reins to an entire offense that probably could have gotten into the college football playoff again. It's a squandering of a career, and I've watched it live. And if it was a person that didn't deserve it, I'd feel terrible for him. But this guy 100% deserves it for everything he's done, for everything he said, everything he's posted. He is the person who really deserves to be made an example of. I take everything I said back. He needs to be the example. And we need to use this situation as much as possible so that these other student-athletes know, let's not do this. Let's not be idiots and ask for more money and then go somewhere that ruins our college career. Because at the end of the day, you're getting paid to play football. That should be rewarding enough. It shouldn't be mattering, oh, this guy is making a million more than me. Well, there's a reason why. Probably because he's better.
Didn't think about that one. I didn't think about that one, Nathan. Maybe Nico didn't even think about that one.
Obviously, not if he's going to UCLA.
I just never seen such a step down when it comes to being such a high-profile quarterback coming in. But his stats, I mean, if you look at his stats and you look at UCLA, they're a match made in heaven. Both equally mid to crap. I mean, match made in heaven. Good riddance, Nico. I think that echoes all Tennessee fans. Good riddance, Nico. I hope Tennessee, as much as I hate that program and I hate the fan base, I hope Tennessee gets the quarterback they deserve because Nico did them absolutely wrong, and they deserve way better at the quarterback position than an absolute diva that Nico is.
Yeah, I mean, focusing on Tennessee, I feel bad for them. I really do. They had everything lined up how they wanted to do. I mean, having to restructure the entire offensive game plan to fit around a quarterback just for him to up and leave you right before the summer starts and really just getting into that pure off season where you need to start practicing and warming up. I think it's going to end up being a blessing in disguise for him, but it definitely hurts in the moment. And moving forward, I think they're going to be a lot more cautious about who they recruit. I think that's going to be a big thing, not just at Tennessee, but at other universities, because they want to make sure you're a right character. It's basically the NFL, because this is the same thing NFL scouts do. And just regular college recruiters will have to start doing it too. Not that they weren't already doing it, but it's going to be a lot more closely watched. And to have someone like Nico slip through the cracks again, and while he might be good at football, he is nowhere near the asking price of $4 million, and he is not good enough of a player to take away from an entire team. And that is the thing to remember. This is a team sport. It's not about Nico. It is not about one individual player.
What?
You are inevitably replaceable on a roster. Unless you're the greatest player in college history, you are inevitably replaceable on a roster. If people can find someone to take your spot who want to play it better, who will do it for less money or no money, because there are still people out there that will play for no money. I would go out there and play for no money right now. That is the opportunity of a lifetime to just be able to play college athletics. And I think we've lost sight of that. I think college athletes have lost sight of that. Whenever money got involved, whenever NIL was allowed, that became the main focus, not the actual sport, not what is actually going on, not the fan base, nothing like that. It has been all about the money ever since we've initiated NIL, and it will continue to be that way until the NCAA wakes up from their coma, which – will that ever happen? I don't know.
What also teams need to be wary of, Nathan, is these stars that players get, the five stars, the number one overall recruit. I mean, how many times have we seen a five-star flame out? It's way too much. And teams have to realize is just because Joe Schmo at ING Academy that's listed as a five-star doesn't mean Joe Schmo is going to be worth $5 million to go play football for your program. It's not that way. You have to interview these players. You have to go watch them. Do they actually play up to the five-star status? And, you know, sometimes they might do that and they come in and it really doesn't work out fit-wise, or they just flame out. And that happens once in a while. But you just have to realize, you have to interview, almost like NFL, like you were talking about, Nathan, you have to interview these athletes like a pre-draft process and realize, okay, all this guy's worried about is how much money we're going to pay them. I don't want that type of player in my program. I want the type of player that's coming in my program because he wants to win football games and he wants to get better. And that is what people and coaches and ADs have realized going forward, is what type of player do you want? Do you want money-hungry players like Nico, or do you want players that are going to come to your program because they want to win, they want to get better, and they want to be the best athlete they can absolutely be? That's what you have to figure out going forward if you're a head coach or an AD. So this Nico thing put a spotlight on these athletes, and I'm excited to see how these athletic departments move go forward from here when it comes to deciding what athletes they're going to offer scholarships to and how much money they're going to offer these five-star recruits coming in. Do they gamble, or do they take these interviews really to heart? So kind of still keeping on the NIL and transfer portal stuff here, let's talk about, Nathan, this thing that came out with the college football committee today.
Board of directors.
They
buckle up.
Proposed a rule deleting 153 long-standing rules from its playbook that will allow schools to share financial benefits directly with the players. In layman's terms, they'll be able to pay the players like NFL teams pay their athletes to come play for their franchise. So it's moving more and more towards the NFL. Amateurism is next to gone. But Nathan, are you a fan of basically programs being able to pay athletes to come to their schools? Which, I mean, is going on right now anyways, but it's just putting it in writing.
Nope. I mean, I don't know how much longer I have left watching college sports the way this is going. I don't know. And it's a sad thing to know, because I grew up watching college sports and just dreaming about it. And the design of it was always perfect in my mind. I never thought anyone needed to be paid. And even now, I think payment is fine, but it's about limiting the payment. And no one seems to focus on that. It is all about how we can get these players access to money easier. And that is not the solution to the sport. Yes, there's a lot of money surrounded in college athletics. Yes, players deserve a bit of it. But the way they're getting paid now has completely ruined the sport. It has corrupted them. And we just talked about Nico and asking for money. And he's not going to be the last player to do it. And now that the NCAA has made it easier for these players to get paid, there's going to be a lot more issues brought to the media. And we'll start hearing about this a lot more often. It's really a sad thing. And the NCAA seems to not really care enough about fixing the sport. They keep getting more and more lenient. And that is – it's the wrong way. We are going the wrong way. I don't know when this is going to be fixed, if it will ever be fixed, because right now I think it's already too late. I think it is too late, and we will have to deal with the fallout from the decisions of the NCAA for years and years to come. And until they fix it, then it's going to be this way. There's a reason I don't watch NFL as much as I watch college, in that the NFL, while it is cool, It never really tied together entire fan bases like college sports do. I mean, going and attending college and rooting for that school and being an alma mater of that school and really tying into the traditions and being able to experience all that, That was always something. And then from the college athlete perspective, being able to go to your dream school and play all 4 years there and get to try for that school and wear that jersey. It didn't matter how much money you're getting paid. It didn't matter that you weren't getting paid at all. It mattered that you got to play for your dream school. Well, all that is out the window. This upcoming generation knows nothing about that. Some of it falls on our generation and what we have caused. We were money hungry, and it's going to be this huge backlash, and it will hurt us for years to come. But at some point, I really want people to catch the mind of what college sports were before and what college sports really mean to people, and not to make it some kind of secondary NFL, because the NFL, I can go watch that right now, obviously. They have their own design for a reason. College football was supposed to be different for a reason, and that is why a lot of people enjoyed it. I did not want a duplicate of the NFL, and that is just directly where we're heading. So, again, I don't know how much longer I have watching college sports, because it continues to ruin itself.
It has entirely. You can implement this rule and say schools can directly pay the players, and you can put in the salary cap of $20 million. But what about the programs that don't have football? That don't have football, like a St. John's or a Creighton, that don't have D1 football programs. They can just put that money much more into basketball. And you have programs like Alabama and Florida and Auburn and Texas that have to split up between football and basketball and baseball and softball and all that type of stuff. They only have $20 million. There's no fairness in that. And I get it. Life's not fair and all that. But you have to level the playing field when you're in college athletics, NFL, anything like that. The playing field has to be level. And it's not right now. And they continue to push forward rules that make it harder to add more rules to fix it. I mean, this thing where you're going to be able to pay athletes, is there parameters around that to prevent certain things from happening? Do they think about that? Probably not the way their tracker's going right now. I mean, it's just the wild, wild west. They opened Pandora's box long ago. They can't get it back in the box. It's too late. And I don't have a problem with athletes getting paid, college athletes getting paid. It's just the fact there's no regulations around it, and it's just willy-nilly, oh, $4 million here, $6 million here, $7 million here. St. John's doesn't have a football program. They can pay college basketball players much more than Florida can. I mean, Todd Golden went on Paul Feinbaum and talked about it, how teams like St. John's and Georgetown and all those type of programs don't have to worry about revenue sharing with college football. They don't have to worry about it. So this is just another thing where another rule – where it's not leveling the playing field, it's just making it a lot more complicated and worse going forward. It's mind-boggling to me how you continue to open floodgates and not close the ones you've already opened. I mean, it's just like drinking out of a fire hose for the NCAA. You can't do anything about it. The leadership is just an app. It's a clown show. I mean, that should be the theme of this, is clown show. I mean, three of the stuff we're talking about today is just clown shows. So it's wild that the NCAA has opened another floodgate, another Pandora's box, when they haven't shut the other ones. But Nathan, to kind of talk about the portal here, some interesting stats that I saw this week in a study in 2023, over 31,000 players hit the portal. About 45% successfully transferred to a new institution. And let's see, 66% of successful transfers move to a lower level. So you have less than half transferring successfully and over half taking a step down. And Nathan, you'll agree, taking a step down is not a bad thing at the end of the day. No. But when you hit the portal, what are most players thinking of? Taking a step up.
Yeah.
I mean, what is wrong with the portal?
There are zero limitations to what you can do. I mean, I really used to hate the rule that a guy transferring had to sit out a year before playing at a new school. But now I'm just like, can we bring that back? Because it would prevent a lot of our issues now. I mean, people especially college athletes, don't want to be patient and wait to play again. They want to play at that moment. And he used to say a guy who the school recruited doesn't come in and take your starting spot in that year. I think that's a big thing. But there's also very little penalty for transferring in conference. And I think that's where you need to start, because a guy being able to transfer from like an LSU to a Tennessee and there's no restrictions whatsoever, it's very wrong. It is extremely wrong. And I think at this point in time, that 1 year transfer rule needs to be allowed. Or something I did see, you get one free year to transfer, and you can play immediately at that school. You decide to transfer again, you're going to have to sit out. And every single time after that, it would really limit the number of people who decide to transfer, and it would limit the number of people who re-entered the transfer portal every single year. Because I think that is the biggest problem, is the reoccurring players who decide to continuously enter the transfer portal every single year after something does not go their way. College sports needs to be about competition and competing for a spot and connecting with your teammates. Now it's just, oh, well, if this school is going to pay me more, I'm going to go there. If this school has a better chance to win a championship, I'm going to go there. And I'm just going to team hop until I get my money or I get that trophy. And you know what that sounds like? It sounds like the good old NBA and NFL. It is professional sports. So it's really – it needs to be focusing on restrictions and transferring. And even what I mentioned, I don't think it's perfect because I think it hurts both the school and the player. And it is not perfect. But I know there's someone out there that can probably come up with something that really stops people from re-entering the transfer portal. And that just needs to be the focus at this point in time. Is these people continuously reoccurring and entering the transfer portal.
There should be no reason I should go on ESPN and see certain players playing at 4 or 5 schools in 4 or 5 years. Absolutely zero reason. Absolutely zero. I don't care. Head coaching changes. There's not 4 or 5 head coaching changes in 4 or 5 years. No, there's not. Injuries. I get it. There's not 4 or 5 injuries that cause you to transfer. I mean, that's just wild that you go look and there's guys that have been playing at 4 or 5 schools in that amount of years. Where's the loyalty? I mean, where's the competition you talk about, Nathan? Where's the competition? I mean, you go to one school, you lose out. Oh, I'm out the door. Oh, I lose a starting quarterback job. Oh, I'm not going to wait a year. I'm out the door. Let me go to Appalachian State and go be the starting quarterback there. I'm out the door. I don't feel like it. I mean, where is the competition? And your idea of waiting, your player gets one free transfer, and after that you wait a year, great idea. Maybe there's some exceptions that if there's a coaching change or you deal with an injury, you get an extra free year or something like that, kind of like a medical red shirt almost. But if you're a player that's just, oh, let me go to Alabama this year. Oh, let me go to Kentucky this year. Oh, let me go to Duke this year. Oh, let me go to Tulane this year. Just because you don't like the fit or anything like that. Nope. End of that. And players would have loved to transfer at least one time and not to sit out a year. That's how your graduate transfers. There are tons of players that probably would have been first-round NFL, NBA draft picks had they been able to transfer like players have now. These guys are spoiled. Spoiled. But the NCAA has yet to put in rules to figure itself out. I'll continue to say it. I'll die on the hill. You open the floodgates, you open Pandora's box, and you're just sitting there. NCAA is sitting on their hands, and they're continuing to open stuff. It doesn't need to be opened. The paying athletes, if you're a university, that bridge should have not been crossed until you figure out the NIL and the transfer portal. There's way too many issues with that right now to be worried about universities being able to pay athletes. But you know what? I'm not in charge of the NCAA. There's clowns in charge of the NCAA. It's like the Barnum and Bailey Circus at this point. Might as well get elephants up there, clowns, people on stilts to run it. I give up with college sports. It's been really hard to watch the past couple of years, unless you're a fan of that team. I mean, the national championships, I can't remember the last time I sat through and watched the entire one since the NIL and transfer portal opened up. I can't remember the last time. It's just it's hard to sit down and watch college basketball and college football and college baseball, remembering the way it was before all this happened. I mean, you could go back, Nathan, to the early 2000s, the 2010s, and how great the atmosphere and everything was surrounding college sports. Mm-hmm. And comparing it to now, it's night and day. I mean, do you agree with that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. In fact, as I've been sitting here, I came up with a name for the rule that I want to implement. It's going to be called the TJ Finley rule, to prevent players from recurring and entering the transfer portal. How many schools has TJ Finley played for?
Okay, LSU, Auburn, Western Kentucky, Texas State, Tulane, 5.
That is embarrassing. Like, that is embarrassing for the sport. How in the world is someone, in the 5 years they played college football, they were playing for a new team every single year? How are we allowing that?
I think it was either LSU or Auburn for 2 years. So
that's even more embarrassing. How is he playing for this long, number one? And number two, how is he playing for this many teams?
It's okay. We have people in the portal that don't even have eligibility left right now, Nathan. They just hit the portal like, oh. Let me try to sue the NCAA and get eligibility. Oh, on my 7th year, somebody come pay me $4 million. Somebody come pay me. I'm 27 years old in college basketball. Somebody pay me money. Hello. College athletics is just a joke. It's crazy. Hope it gets better because we know the potential it has. We know how great it is to watch when it's right. But it's hard. It's hard right now, the situation it's in. And the inability of the governing bodies to figure it out. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.